Politics and Science can be heard weekly on WMRW LP Warren 95.1 FM, airing on Mondays at 5 p.m. And in the Bellows Falls area, can be heard on Wool LP Bellows Falls at 101.1 FM, airing from 3 to 4 p.m. on Sundays and from 9 to 10 a.m. on Mondays. Politics and Science presents the viewpoints of its participants and does not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of any other person or organization. Welcome to Politics and Science. It's May 18th, 2009, and my guest again, happily, is Dr. Samuel Epstein. Dr. Epstein was on last week. He's a professor emeritus of environmental and occupational medicine at the University of Illinois School of Public Health and chairman of the Cancer Prevention Coalition, PreventCancer.com. You can find that. He has published some 260 peer-reviewed articles and co-authored or authored 11 books, including the prize-winning Politics of Cancer. His latest book is Toxic Beauty. That's available now, and it's the subject of our talk last week, and we're going to continue on with that a little bit today, because we didn't quite finish on some of the widely used ingredients in products that you may use at home, cosmetic and healthcare products that should be probably be avoided. Dr. Epstein, welcome back.
Good to be back with you.
So last week we were discussing basically preventable causes of cancer, namely healthcare products. We talked about sunscreen, how that actually tricks you into exposing yourself longer, and there's been more melanoma since sunscreens became widely into use, which was shocking to me. And I also learned that products going through your skin don't have the benefit of being basically detoxified by your liver. They're even more poisonous than toxins that you eat. So those were some of the eye-opening things for me personally. What we didn't get to was shampoos and deodorants. I don't believe we discussed deodorants and perfumes. And I'll leave it to you where to start.
Okay, well, let's start off with toxic products which are used widely on infants and children. Now, based on a survey of in mainstream stores, we found that all the main products contained different toxic ingredients or variations of these toxic ingredients, in some cases up to 6 or 7 different toxic ingredients. When it comes to products for infants and children, I'm not going to name products because virtually you'll find these toxic ingredients in virtually all of the mainstream products. I'll briefly summarize what we found in the products for infants and children and also give names of some safe products for infants and children, which I think is more use and more practical importance to you. Well, what we see in products for infants and children is very disturbing. They contain allergens, a wide range of allergens, allergic ingredients such as benzyl alcohol. They contain a range of ingredients that are precursors of carcinogens like ethylene oxide and dioxane. They contain ingredients which are precursors of the carcinogen formaldehyde. They contain ingredients which are hormonal inaction and can produce clear-cut hormonal effects in infants with recognized genital abnormalities and also increased risks of testicular cancer and other abnormalities. Those penetration enhancers, in other words, ingredients that go through the skin just as though they're going through water without any blockage whatsoever. So the mainstream products, all the mainstream products that you find in stores for infants and children, are contaminated with a wide range of these different ingredients. Far more to the point is the question, what are the safe products for infants and children? And the book does actually give some examples of these, and I strongly recommend these that you look at these products and buy them for your infants and children. Now, the baby wipes, and several of these are organic. In fact, the majority are organic, certified organic products, but others are based on safe synthetic ingredients. But let's give you a few examples. For baby wipes, there's Avalon Organics and Tushy's Baby Wipes, well-named Tushy. For diaper creams, there's Aroma Baby Barrier Balm. For lotions and moisturizers, there's again Aroma Baby Natural Baby Lotion. There's a product called Cosmic, which is based largely on organics. There's Emily's Skin Soother Lotions. And now let's turn to shampoos and conditioners. There's Aubrey Organics. That's a relatively common company, and you can generally find them in most stores. And I, again, Aubrey Organics, Dr. Bronner's Castile Liquid Soap, and Jason Shampoo and Body Wash. Other soaps are Dr. Bronner's, Emily Skin Soothers, Vermont Soap Organics. For baby powders, any brand of talc, any brand of powder which contains talc is dangerous, because that can produce acute lung irritation. And a very significant number of baby powder products do contain talc. They are labeled, fortunately. But the only baby powders that are safe, really, are those, and you can find these at relatively few stores, based on organic cornstarch powder. When it comes to children's toothpaste, there's Pelu, P-E-P-E-E-L-U, spearmint toothpaste, and there's Healing Scent spearmint tooth gel. So I can briefly summarize the situation for baby products, infant and baby products. The overwhelming majority in mainstream stores are toxic for one reason or another, because they contain one or more of these ingredients, or sometimes multiple of these ingredients. And for this reason, we strongly recommend that you go to these dozen or so products, the companies which we've searched very carefully, and we list them as providing safe products for infants and children. So I think that is the thing that we need to emphasize. What are the safe products, rather than the companies that are listing dangerous products, because there's such a large number of them. Yes. Now, as far as hair dyes are concerned, we estimate that about over 30% of women and about 10% of men in the U.S. and also Japan and Europe use hair dyes frequently or infrequently. And by doing so, they're taking risks, because the majority of these hair dyes, particularly the black and the dark brown, contain what is known as PPD, paraphenylenediamine, PPD, that's the abbreviation. And paraphenylenediamine, which again is discussed in some detail in the book, is carcinogenic. It's also an irritant. It's also an allergen. And it has been shown clearly to cause a variety of cancers, particularly non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. That is a cancer whose incidence has escalated by about the last 30 years or so by about 70 or 80%. And it's the dye from, non-Hodgkin lymphoma is the dye that killed Jackie Kennedy. And we know, those of you who are old enough to remember photographs of Jackie Kennedy, will know that she always had black, shiny hairs. And it was well known that she used these black hair dyes, PPD hair dyes, and that's the cancer from which she died. There's also other cancers associated with paraphenylenediamine, or PPD. And the evidence for this is well known. I mean, it's not as though it's anything new. We've known about it for nearly 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to hair dyes, be safe. And only buy the certified herbal hair dyes. And there's one particular dye, company which I want to mention, because they contain natural botanical and conditioning ingredients. And it is Logona, L-O-G-O-N-A. And these products, unlike PPD, can achieve a variety of stable and long-lasting colors, even ranging down to copper blonde. So here we have one of the relatively few of the dangerous products for which there are safe alternatives readily available. Another one is mascara.
Mm-hmm.
Now, again, I can't, and there's no point mentioning any company that is safe, because the overwhelming majority of the mascara products contain mercury. Now, and there's no regulations whatsoever about this, except in Minnesota. Minnesota, a couple of years or so ago, banned mercury in cosmetics, and the commonest source of exposure to mercury is in mascaras. So stay away from mascaras, because unless they are certified as mercury-free, because there's no FDA doesn't require any labeling of them, and apart from the the dangers of mercury, producing neurological damage in particular, and also its effects accumulate, and it's not just the one exposure that mounts, but exposure after exposure, the effects are cumulative. And I particularly salute Minnesota, because that's the first state that banned any cosmetics containing mercury. And as I said before, the commonest one containing mercury is in mascara. Now, there's another group of products which we call cosmeceuticals. That's a bit of a mouthful. Cosmeceuticals are really anti-aging products, or products that claim to be anti-aging. Now, this is a field ripe and rich, also rich for a wide range of cosmetic companies, and also cosmeceutical physicians who claim that by using these products, these highly priced products, you can retain the natural youthfulness of your skin, and without, because as you know, skin aging is a natural phenomenon, and they claim that these products, in fact, reverse or block or retard the effects of aging. Now, to all intents and purposes, this is just very, very untrue. The only one briefly summarize the effects of these ingredients in the cosmeceuticals. And the worst, of course, is a product called AHA. There's a whole group of products known as AHAs, or the alpha hydroxy acids. They are fortunately becoming less and less common, because they can literally take off the superficial layers of your skin, and for a few weeks afterwards, your skin looks pink and nice and smooth because the surface layers have gone. However, but in addition to that, you find the other effects, including hormonal disruption. Now, there is, however, one in particular ingredient which is called Restylane or Perlane. And that's a Swedish product which has become available in many of the advanced stores that have a reputation for safe products, but often not in the mainstream stores. So Restylane is a very, very important one, and Restylane is an injectable that is more effective than Botox and can be used together with Botox. And so Restylane I would recommend as the commonest and safest one, and you have to go to your physician for it. So when he wants to inject you with Botox, say you'd rather have Restylane or a mix of Restylane and Botox, because the combination of the two is even better than Restylane alone. So when I was asked to actually name products that are toxic, I found it not practical to do that, because all of the mainstream products, or nearly all of the mainstream products, and the important thing is to be able to go to those products which are safe and which are named in the book, and for each of these categories. Although when it comes to the last category of the anti-aging products or the cosmeceuticals, I'm afraid I can't really offer you anything except this one example which I've just named. So that is the rather depressing story. You have to be a careful shopper, and that's about all I can say on this subject. There is no ready source of information on toxic products containing toxic ingredients, because they're all variations on the same theme. They contain mixes of different toxic ingredients, so really there's no point picking any one or two out of a hat, because we're really dealing with a widespread phenomenon which pervades the products which you see in all stores. Now, I'm going to move on to a totally different subject.
Can I ask you a question about the cosmetics? The shampoo often has lauryl sulfate in it. Is that a problem?
Yes. No, lauryl sulfate is to be avoided, because that is a product that can damage skin. And so anything SLS, or sodium lauryl sulfate, will damage your skin. So I would stay away from it.
Okay.
And that, again, is a common ingredient in a wide range of hair products.
And perfumes in general, do they often have phthalates in them?
Often have, no. Perfumes, well, they shouldn't have them.
Uh-huh.
But phthalates are often added without, because the FDA doesn't in any way attempt to block this, they are often added to perfumes as hidden ingredients. So mainstream perfumes can contain phthalates. In the EU, in your products sold in the European Union, that is absolutely forbidden.
Mm.
But also, the mainstream perfumes can contain what we call fragrance boosters.
Mm.
These are synthetic ingredients which increase the potency of the perfume or of the product, and make it actually more dangerous too. So the only safe perfumes are ones which contain the ingredients in a table in the book, and these approved ingredients are those which have been approved by the European Union, which after careful analysis and testing and evaluation of these, I came to the conclusion that the ingredients which are named were safe. However, this isn't going to help very much unless you go to a product which is handled by a responsible company, because the non-responsible companies can add fragrance boosters, which can massively increase the duration and the intensity of the odor, and also expose you to particularly risks of allergenic reactions.
I know a lot of people who are actually made ill by other people's perfume.
Absolutely, yes. There's no question at all about it. And it is as antisocial as smoking at dinner with the in company, exposing other people to these. They're really very toxic products. It is, to say the least, alarming, and really it attacks the fundamental principles of democracy. When health can be sacrificed for the benefit of ruthless companies that don't give a damn except making a fast buck. Now, when I say a fast buck, I'm talking about millions of bucks, but that's another matter. So I think that outrage is really is a proper reaction to some of the things I'm saying now, a sense of absolute outrage, and I think that you should express this outrage with your shopping dollar.
Yes, that's right. You can vote with your dollar. How about lipstick? I've heard that has...
Well, lipstick, you have the problem with mercury. Mercury is present in some lipsticks. There have been surveys of lipsticks. And that's one of the reasons why we detail on lipsticks in the book. And you really have to buy lipsticks from reputable companies, from organic store companies, or companies which are certified as not containing lipstick. There is one state, I think it was Arizona, that banned the use of, it's illegal then to use lipsticks containing lead.
So now you wanted to change the subject completely?
Yes. The Obama Cancer Plan.
Ah, yes.
Well, the Obama Cancer Plan is very, very important because Obama was the first president that was... When he came to his presidency, he announced a plan to a comprehensive cancer plan. And the plan reflects very strong emphasis on oncology, which is diagnosis and treatment of cancer. However, this is unbelievable. No reference at all is made to prevention. Now, it's obvious that the more cancer that can be prevented, the less there is to treat. That should be obvious.
Yes.
So while the president's heart is in the right place, clearly, when he developed a comprehensive cancer plan, he got advice from experts in his areas where he had contact, and particularly Rahm Emanuel's brother, Ezekiel Emanuel. As you know, Rahm Emanuel is one of the leading directors of policies in the Obama administration, but his brother, Ezekiel Emanuel, is a very distinguished oncologist But oncologist means somebody who treats cancer and uses drugs to treat cancer. So we presume that the major source of information on cancer comes from oncologists, Ron Manuel's brother, and other oncologists who seem to have the ear of the president. And this is very, very unfortunate that that there's no reference whatsoever to prevention, or the recognition that the more cancer you prevent, the less there is to treat. And the plan really is, in principle, well organized, because it coordinates responsibilities of the National Cancer Institute, the Centers for Disease Control, for Epidemiology and Support of Cancer Survivors, and the Centers for Medicare for funding cancer-related care, and FDA for regulating cancer drugs. When I mention Medicare and Medicaid services funding cancer-related care, I can't help tell you how deeply shocked I am by the news today that women, the day after getting mastectomies, or women having mastectomies, are being forced out of hospital the next day in some hospitals because the health insurance won't cover more than a day. Is this a dreamland, the reverse of dreamland, a horror land, when women a day after this traumatic surgery, an emotionally traumatic surgery besides the physical, are being forced out a day after? Now, this is what the healthcare plan, this would, because there's no, apart from the absence of emphasis on prevention, there's no emphasis on the prevention of the healthcare industry from behaving in this reckless and irresponsible fashion. I only hope that the president will take firm and strong action in the immediate future. However, let me get back to the Obama Cancer Plan. What is really so important to recognize in this whole field is that over the last few decades, when the war against cancer started off in 71 with President Nixon initiating the war against cancer, and the budget then was $200 million a year. Now, the budget since then has escalated to about $6 billion, that's by nearly over 30-fold to $6 billion. So from $200 million to over $6 billion, and from 1971 till now, the incidence of a wide range of cancers, which are non-smoking in origin, has increased massively. For instance, malignant melanoma of the skin, 170%. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, 80%. Thyroid cancer, 110%. Testes cancer, 60%. Childhood cancer, 40%. So what it amounts to is that we're seeing a massive increase in the incidence of cancers due to the fact that none of the agencies involved have any interest whatsoever in prevention, and also because oncologists have so dominated the policies of the National Cancer Institute that there's little or no regard or understanding of the need to prevent disease, because clearly the more cancer you prevent, the less there is to treat. And I should emphasize that, first of all, there was a distinguished, I should like to quote to you from a very distinguished Nobel laureate who's the president of a major cancer center, the Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center on the West Coast. And several years ago, recognized by some as being mainstream, he warned that Congress and the public are not paying NCI, National Cancer Institute, billions of dollars a year to promote ineffective drugs for terminal disease. And the cost of these drugs has increased over 100-fold. Many of these drugs has increased over 100-fold in the last decade. And we spend, in this country, we spend 5 times more than the British do on chemotherapy per patient, although the survival rates in England are the same as in the United States. So what it amounts to is that there's little understanding, little if any understanding about the Obama administration of the need to prevent cancer, because if we have this vast body of information on avoidable causes of cancer, which is Europe is acting on, but it has failed to penetrate into the Obama team of advisors. And I should mention that a press release that we put out on this within the last year has been endorsed, warning against these concerns, has been endorsed by some 20 or so leading cancer experts nationally.
We're talking to Dr. Samuel Epstein, and we're talking about preventable causes of cancer. And you mentioned that they've increased 30-fold the amount of money to $6 billion over the last, 40 years almost. And all those cancers...
It's well over 30-fold, and it's actually about... It's over $6 billion now.
And all those cancers have increased that you mentioned.
That's right.
But I believe the National Cancer Institute and the American Cancer Society claim that they're winning the war on cancer. So how does that... Okay.
Well, that's a lousy joke.
Is it?
Yeah. That's a lousy joke. We are losing the war against cancer without any question at all. I've given you the latest National Cancer Institute statistics.
Right, so how do
Malignant melanoma, 170%. Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, 80%. Thyroid cancer, 118%. Yeah. Testes cancer increased 60%. Childhood cancers, 40%. Some childhood cancer, that's, when I say 40%, there's about 8 different childhood cancers, so I'm just lumping them together and taking the average. Some of the childhood cancers have gone up by 60 or 70%.
So that's horrific. And so how do they come out and say that they're, why don't they just level with us?
I might as well ask you that question. How is it? How is it that Obama hasn't realized this yet? Now, I have no idea what influence, if any of your listeners have. It's probably unlikely that they have, except as outraged citizens. But any of you that want to express your outrage in any form or other, you'll find press releases of mine. I think there was a press release which, see if I can find a date for you, in January 23 of this year. You'll find it on the Cancer Prevention Coalition's website, www.preventcancer.com, and you'll see the figures quoted there. So, if you're outraged by this, express this outrage in any way you can find appropriate. Create citizen groups. I mean, why don't you make that a priority?
Mm.
I mean, you obviously are disturbed by this, surprised and disturbed by this. I mean, you could become a spokesman for the state, or at least your community. And I would hope that many of the people who are listening to you and listening to the highly responsible programs which you put on, of which I've been very happy to talk to, I mean, express a sense of outrage. There's no point being outraged and saying nothing about it, but translate that into action. And you'll find the facts and figures on press releases, of which I've just given you one, and others on the website which go into further detail on this. What we need is citizen activism. And this horror that I just mentioned to you,
yes,
of women being discharged from hospital, the healthcare industry forcing discharge of women, this information only reached me today, a day after mastectomy. If this doesn't strike you as barbaric and extreme, I'm sure you're all as shocked as I am,
yeah,
as must be evident from the way I'm talking about this.
Well, it sounds like some kind of inhuman factory.
It is. It is. But now, I don't want to in any way overreact to this, but however, the Obama cancer plan, theoretically, of course, Obama would be absolutely, president would be absolutely outraged if he had this information, but the overwhelming emphasis on oncology, on diagnosis and treatment of cancer, and the disregard of the vast scientific body of information on avoidable causes of cancer is indeed what his policy is.
So
while I have the great admiration for the president, he is ill-served by his advisors, and one expects nothing more from the healthcare industry, so there's no point criticizing them. Their own conduct is sufficient critique of the amoral practices they are,
well, let's,
which they conduct.
Let's talk about the healthcare industry some. You're talking here about what happens to women who undergo a mastectomy, and let's talk about earlier on in the history of that progress of that disease, when they're told by many of the doctors I know recommend that people get regular mammographies, and I believe...
Well, now let's wrap up what we've just been talking about.
Okay.
And move into the mammography field.
All right.
they are connected clearly, but I'd like to talk about that as a kind of as a lead-in. You've given me a good lead-in, and let's talk about that, and let's get into a little bit of the politics of it. Now, this is an area which I've been talking and writing about for, I would say, well over 20 years or so, if not longer than that. Now, but however, the new there's a new dimension to the to this topic, which only surfaced just within the last month, and that is there is a remarkable woman called Debbie, Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz, S-C-H-U-L-T-Z.
Mm-hmm.
She's about a 40-year-old Floridian who's a star in the Democratic Party. And she's a chief whip, the party's chief deputy whip, and a member of various congressional committees, the appropriations and judiciary committees. So she really knows, and she's legislating on personal experience. And she recently, within the last year or so, announced that she had spent last year dealing with her own breast cancer, and she was introducing a bill which is called EARLY. And EARLY stands for Education, the E, Awareness, the A, R for Require, L for Learning, and Y for Young Act. So all that put together spells EARLY, E-A-R-L-Y.
Mm-hmm.
And this features has a pink ribbon instead of the L. And so basically what she wants is that women should have, should be taught about breast self-examination as a very, very cheap and an effective alternative to mammography, which is, believe it or not, is dangerous. The routine mammography, particularly premenopausal mammography, also, the dangers for postmenopausal mammography are there, too. The dangers of premenopausal mammography are very, very substantial. Now, this may come as a terrible shock to listeners, and you'll think, good Lord, who are we listening to? Is this guy gone loony? No, the answer is no. I published a detailed scientific article on this called The Dangers and Unreliability of Mammography.
And we're losing
examination is a safe, effective, and practical alternative.
Dr. Epstein, we're losing you. Can you hear me, Dr. Epstein? We're losing you there. Bad connection.
Sorry.
That's all right.
I beg your pardon.
Maybe you could repeat that last sentence.
This paper was published about in 2001, about 9 years ago, and it lays out the scientific basis which justifies Debbie Wasserman Schultz's position that women should be taught breast self-examination at an early age, because the earlier you teach women how to do this, the more effective it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
And the so-called experts, the industry of mammography and the clinicians that practice mammography, they're wedded in their understanding, and also by the profit-making basis of mammography, which is particularly with the new technologies, relatively new technologies, is a very, very profitable industry.
Hmm.
Now, rather than be vague about it, I've got to go into some of the specifics of this and the reason why I say this.
Okay.
But let me, before doing that, state that monthly breast self-examination combined with an annual examination by a trained nurse is at least as effective in picking up early cancers, and it has no dangers at all. Now, I have to explain what are the dangers of screening mammography. Now, screening mammography, which is recommended for women starting the age of 40 or so, this poses very significant and cumulative risks of radiation for premenopausal women. Now, the routine practice in mammography is taking 4 films of each breast annually, and that goes on from for a 10-year period, for approximately 10-year period from the ages of 40 to 50, roughly being the age of the menopause. Now, let's explain what are the dangers of this. There are several dangers, but the first and the most important is the radiation exposure, which they get in that time, which is an undeniable cause of breast cancer. So premenopausal mammography poses very significant risks of breast cancer. Let me explain. Now, what is the radiation you get from a chest X-ray? The radiation which you get from a chest X-ray is about 1/1000th of a rad. A rad is radiation absorbed dose. 1/1000th of a rad, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So 1/1000th of a rad, and that is broadly focused on the entire chest rather than narrowly on the breast. Now, the premenopausal breast is highly sensitive to radiation. The average dose of the average dose which women get when they're exposed to mammography is about 250 millirads, or thousandths of a rad. And over a for four exposures, that amounts to one rad, which is 1,000 times greater than an exposure from a chest X-ray. So the radiation for each breast on for each breast over the 1 year of each year over the 10-year period results in getting a cumulative radiation dose, which is which will increase risks of breast cancer by 10%. And let's go over the figures again.
Wow.
The chest X-ray is 1/1000th of a rad. Okay?
Yeah.
Four breast X-rays amount to, each breast X-ray is 250 rads. So that's so the four of them is amounts to 1,000. Is at 1,000. So each year that each breast gets a premenopausal mammography amounts to 1,000 times greater radiation than the exposure from a chest X-ray. Now, so over 1 year, each rad exposure increases risks of breast cancer by about 10%. So over a 10-year period, that increases risks by 10%. Now, the risks are further increased by another 4 or 5-fold for those women who are carriers of a certain gene called the AT gene, and by some estimates, this accounts for up to 20% of all breast cancers diagnosed each year. Now, this is even worse still because some centers are encouraging women to undergo what's called baseline screening for the age of 30, for which there's no evidence at all of any future relevance. Now, to make matters worse, over and above these serious dangers, well, I should say, but let's move on, but let's not move away from the radiation. So if it's one rad, with a cumulative 10% risk over a decade of screening, this risk is further increased when it over the 10-year period of time.
Mm.
Now, so what it amounts to is that within over a 10-year period, the amount of radiation that a woman gets from annual mammography is equivalent to roughly the dose which a Japanese woman a mile away from the epicenter in Hiroshima, Nagasaki, where the atom bomb was exploded, it's roughly equivalent to that. Now, this is unbelievable. Literally, this is unbelievable, except that this information has been published. I published it together with two leading experts in a leading scientific international journal called the International Journal of Health Services, and the co-authors were Rosalie Bertel, a well-recognized scientist, and Barbara Seaman, who's unfortunately dead, who was the first woman the leader of the women's breast cancer movement, and she was the leader of the women of the breast cancer movement, but she was the person who warned against dangers of estrogens and use of hormone replacement therapy as long ago as the 60s. Now, having said that, let's move on to some other aspects of this. The risks, which I told you about, and I just mentioned very briefly, are even greater still for those women that carry the AT gene, the ataxia telangiectasia, the AT gene. And this is roughly about 10 to 20%, I think more like 15% of all breast cancers diagnosed in the States fall into that category. Now, in addition to that, for decades, as early as the 1900s, the 1910s, 1920s, physicians were warned to handle breasts carefully, and particularly breasts where there was any question of cancer in them, and to handle them very carefully because compression in any way could rupture little clusters of cells and accidentally spread cells, which are in a precancerous state, or just localized spread cells, breast cancer cells, all over the breast. Now, as you know, as women who are listening to me know, mammography entails tight and often painful compression of the breast, particularly in premenopausal women where the breast is relatively firm. So with tight compression of the breast, you're increased over and above radiation hazards, radiation exposure hazards, you are increasing risks of rupturing blood vessels, leading to distant and lethal spreads of malignant cells. Now, so these are among the problems of mammography of which the public remains uninformed. But on the other hand, when these Congressman Schultz is making strong recommendations, but with her early act, for breast self-examination, she is being viciously attacked by the so-called experts on mammography, the self-interested experts in mammography, to make a living out of it. And hear no evil, see no evil kind of thing. Now, fortunately, Congressman Schultz is being backed now by Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, who's preparing to introduce a Senate version of the bill, and fortunately also Henry Waxman, Waxman, a Democrat from California, chairman of the Committee on Energy, is also backing the early act. Belatedly, we're beginning to see some movement in Washington, and I strongly applaud this and intend to involve myself in this.
Occasionally, you seem to drift away from the microphone. I don't know if it's our technical problem or if it's just you're facing away.
I'm not sure why. Probably my problem. Have you lost much of what I've said?
Just the last sentence of what you said there.
Well, I was saying that I think it's very, very important that over and above the initiative of Wasserman Schultz, we're seeing support from Senator Amy Klobuchar from Minnesota, and also who wants to introduce a Senate version of the bill, from Senator Waxman, Chairman of the Committee on Energy and Commerce, is a co-sponsor of it. So we are belatedly seeing some important allies in D.C. who are coming to the support of this new initiative, and which has been criticized by the experts in mammography, who are really very disturbed by the fact that their pocketbooks are going to be damaged and their profit, this highly profitable industry, is going to suffer economic losses because of the of this initiative and because of the realization that once a woman has been trained examine her breast, and she does this on an annual basis once a month, premenopausally, and does this for that once a month, and does this for, every month for at least a 10-year period prior to menopause, so from about the late 30s till about 50s. This is a safe way, and are very effective. And we have scientific trials done in Canada which proved that the results from breast self-examination, which women have to be taught how to do, and then once a year they should go in for a refresher course by a trained nurse. And we've got some studies in Canada now from Toronto General Hospital which showed that the results are at least as effective from diagnosis of cancer, of breast cancers, early breast cancers, without any of the risks, the very strong risks of radiation. I repeat again, the risks from radiation over a 10-year period from 4 mammograms for each breast amount to roughly the amount of radiation which a woman 1 mile away from, which a Japanese woman 1 mile away from the epicenter where the atom bomb exploded in Hiroshima and Nagasaki would have received.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this information is probably shocking to you.
Yes.
I'm sure it is.
I can't believe that they would recommend that people would get that kind of diagnostic radiation if it wasn't effective.
Well, it is effective. It's effective in diagnosis of tumors, but it's also effective in producing an increased risk of breast cancer. There's a wide range of dangers from it, but I'm not saying that it will not pick up the breast cancer. I'm saying that at all.
It sounds like you're saying that the self-examination will actually find the same tumors.
Breast self-examination, once a woman has been taught to do this by a trained nurse, and she does this on a regular monthly basis, and she's been shown how to do it, and it takes a couple of lessons, two or three lessons, and then does this for every single month over a 10-year period, this will be at least as effective as mammography, and without any dangers whatsoever. I should mention that I should stress that in addition to being trained how to do this, and being checked once a year, that this should be this checking process should be repeated over a 10-year period. There is one other factor which I've neglected to mention so far: are the costs of this. You see, there's been a shift now in the whole of the technology. In the whole of the technology, in the direction of more so-called more efficient mammography, and that is the mammography industry it wants to shift the whole of the screening process into technologies which are so-called, from their standpoint, more efficient. And to move into what are called the high-tech digital machines. The digital machines, which were approved by FDA about 2000, cost about $400,000 each. And the so-called film machine, the machines which have been used and are used in most hospitals and centers, are what we call film machines, and they cost only about $100,000. So we're seeing shifts in costs from $100,000 to the far more sophisticated and efficient so-called machines, industry machines, the high-tech digital machines, which obviously are very profitable for the industry and very profitable for radiologists. So we're seeing this vast economically dominated shift from regular mammography into digital mammography, and this is digital mammography is also likely to increase result in the increased diagnosis of what we call ductal carcinoma in situ tumors, which don't really represent, in other words, false cancers. The diagnosis of false cancers.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially, we're seeing what Congressman Schultz has picked up and has diagnosed and understood, that the industry itself is a ruthless industry focused on self-aggrandizement, focused on profit, indifferent to the risks of this. And if you read the correspondence and read the literature on what's happening with Schultz, she's being viciously attacked by all the mainstream experts in the field are people like Donald Berry, a so-called expert in breast cancer prevention. I quote from him, "I leave politics to the politicians. Why can't they leave science to the scientists?" And the answer is because the scientists are, with due respect, crooks.
Mm.
Crooks. Because they are aware, or should be aware, of the information which I've just spelled out to you, and the vast difference in radiation exposure of a chest X-ray,
mm-hmm.
with a very, very high radiation exposure over a 10-year period. And just to make certain that you, the public, who are listening, understand that this is well-based and unarguable science, I will give you the name of the journal. It's called, where I published this together with two other experts, the International Journal of Health Services, Volume 31, the International Journal of Health Services, Volume 31, Number 3, pages 605 to 615, 2001.
And
the International Journal of Health Services, Volume 31, Number 3, pages 605 to 615, 2001. And incidentally, the Los Angeles Times ran in February 25, 2002, and you can probably still find this from your, by Googling,
mm-hmm.
a commentary headed, "Mammography Doesn't Come Without Risk." A commentary by myself. This is a long article on dangers of breast self-examination by the Los Angeles Times.
I see.
So the scientific basis for these concerns, which I've just expressed with considerable outrage, are well-based. And I think we have to salute Congressman Schultz, Debbie Schultz, and I think you should do this in every way you can.
Mm-hmm.
Her name, again, is Debbie, D-E-B-B-I-E, Wasserman, W-A-S-S-E-R-M-A-N, Schultz. And she is a member of the Congress of Florida, but she's also now being supported by Senator Amy Klobuchar, K-L-O-B-U-C-H-A-R, a Democrat of Minnesota, and being supported by Senator Waxman. So these are people, if any of you have contacts or indirect contacts, or want to organize opposition based on this information I've given you, I urge you to do so.
All right. Can we talk about the politics of it a little bit? It sounds like those experts that are opposing her publicly, and they sound like they're just taking their marching orders from industry. And do you think industry also controls, I think we touched on this a little before, the National Cancer Institute and the American Cancer Society?
Well, this is extremely interesting. The American Cancer Society has refused to make any comment on it. Now, you should say, why is that?
Hmm.
The American Cancer Society has taken no position on the bill. "We're monitoring the bill," said a spokesman for the American Cancer Society. And the reason for this is, the American Cancer Society, as I revealed about over a decade or so ago, is knee-deep in bed with the industry and with all of the industries related to mammography. And this has all been literally published in detail. For instance, in 1984, the American Cancer Society began the National Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Right.
And with its flagship, National Mammography Day. Now, who do you think funds this? The Imperial Chemical Industries, a leading international manufacturer of petrochemicals, and Zeneca, a manufacturer of tamoxifen, claimed to reduce risks of breast cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So the leading, the organization that has taken the lead in the whole of the mammography industry in the Breast Cancer Awareness Month has refused now to comment on it because they know I have the data and have published on the data showing that their hands are dirty, their hands are unclean. And I can give you a date of a press release on this.
Hmm.
In October 16 of 2007, I have a press release, which you will find on preventcancer.com, my website of the Cancer Prevention Coalition, called "Breast Cancer Awareness Month Misleads Women." Now, all this may sound to you like a dreadful nightmare or like Alice in Wonderland or Alice in Terrorland. But it happens to be true. Now, we are living in a great democracy, but sometimes you have to question whether this democracy has too powerful links to certain self-interested industries and to those MDs who sell out to those industries.
A lot of the compromising of the doctors that we know is not intentional necessarily. They're very busy, and they listen to the pharmaceutical companies and the industrial experts.
I'm not talking about the rank and file.
Yeah.
I'm talking about the leadership. No, I couldn't agree with you anymore.
Yeah.
The average man who, or physician that handles mammography is totally unaware of these concerns. You know, he's assured by the experts.
Mm-hmm.
This is the way to go.
That's right.
And when you talk to him about the dosage of a chest x-ray being a thousandth of a rad, and when it comes to 10 years premenopausal mammography, you're dealing with 5 rads, and this is a radiation dosage level, which is similar to the level which a woman a mile away from the atom bomb exposure, a Japanese woman, would
mm-hmm.
have received.
Mm-hmm.
5 rads, 5,000 millirads. And radiation is one of the most important recognized causes of breast cancer.
And what's the reaction you get?
Well, what I was saying to you is that this is an issue of basic democracy, and also an issue where the citizens who I'm talking to now should understand this and should try do their best. I've given you the names of the two
mm-hmm.
members of Congress, the member of the Senate, member of the House, and member of the Senate. And I think it's up to the people I'm talking to take whatever action they feel is necessary and is appropriate. I've given you some references to this. It's possible that this will be too much trouble for people I'm talking to. And, you know, we've all got preoccupations. We all have families. We all have preoccupations and various things to do. So what is it that moves some people and not others? But I'm hoping that this talk which you've organized, this opportunity you've given me to talk to citizens in your state, will result in some action based on this outrage. First of all, action, perhaps it should be preceded by looking at the press release I've mentioned to you, or looking at the article in the Los Angeles Times,
yeah.
Google, things. So,
let's give your website again, which is preventcancer.com,
yes.
Which has a lot of good links to it, and probably links to some of the references you've just given.
I don't think we would actually give you links to the journal, to the Los Angeles Times. It may well be, but I doubt it. You'd have to Google those,
okay.
That particular one. But the article which I gave you can be obtained from scientific libraries.
All right.
The International Journal of Health Services. Go to any medical center.
We're out of time again, Dr. Epstein. It's flown by, and we've been talking to Dr. Samuel Epstein, helping people to prevent cancer by informing them of the environmental causes of those cancers. And thank you very much for all your work and for being on here today.
Been a pleasure talking with you.
Likewise. We'll talk to you again soon, I hope.
Yep.
Goodbye. Goodbye.
So you've been listening to Dr. Samuel Epstein, and you can find out more about his work at preventcancer.com.
If you have any questions for Politics and Science, you can direct them by email to politicsandscience@madriver.com. That's politicsandscience@madriver.com. Politics and Science can be heard weekly on WMRW LP Warren 95.1 FM, airing on Mondays at 5 p.m. And in the Bellows Falls area, can be heard on Wool LP Bellows Falls at 101.1 FM, airing from 3 to 4 p.m. on Sundays and from 9 to 10 a.m. on Mondays. Politics and Science presents the viewpoints of its participants and does not necessarily reflect the viewpoints of any other person or organization.